The doctors thought it a coincidence that the girls had all worked at Radium Dial, but nothing more than that. They had all died from different things, and their symptoms varied so much that there was no possible connection. Catherine pushed the stroller home dejectedly and let herself in the front door, 520 East Superior Street, which had been left to her by her uncle when he died in 1931, was a two-story detached white clapboard house with a pointed roof and a covered porch. It was on a quiet residential street. "It wasn't a big home," remembered Catherine's nephew, James. "It had a galley kitchen and a modest dining room, where Tom would read books of an evening. This room was furnished by a blue couch and a round oak table. It was a perfect family house. We were so happy just staying home with Tommy," remembered Tom with a fond smile. As Catherine set Tommy down on a rug and watched him play, her mind went over her appointment. Mindful of the Dial painter's deaths out east, she had asked the doctor today if radium poisoning could be what she had, but he'd said clearly that he didn't think so. He, like all the others, had repeatedly advised her he was not informed as to radium poisoning, thus to diagnose her case. Perhaps the doctors were influenced by what they'd read in the paper. No Ottawa girls could possibly have radium poisoning, for the paint Radium Dial used was not hazardous. Every time she went to church, Catherine was aware of the Radium Dial studio just across the road. It was a much quieter place these days. The economic downturn had the little town of Ottawa firmly in its grip. Tenaciously so, in fact, as Illinois was such a big farming state. Many Dial painters had been laid off. Those who remained no longer lip-pointed, perhaps because of the Eben Byers case. Some were using their fingers instead. This doubled the amount of paint each woman handled. But given the financial hardships, the workers would paint any way they could. Those lucky enough to have a job were fiercely loyal to the firm. There was a feeling that the whole town needed to support such an employer. There were very few of them about in these straitened times. Though most of the original girls had been laid off or quit, their friendships had not faded. Catherine's close neighbours included Marie Rossiter and Charlotte Purcell. They often spent time together and, when they met, they talked. They talked of Catherine's tender jaw, of Charlotte's achy elbow, of Marie's sore legs. Marie and Charlotte had also gone to various doctors, and as the women discussed what the different physicians had said, they realised they'd all had the same response. And it wasn't just them. Mary Robinson's mother said the doctors scoffed when she mentioned radium poisoning as a possible cause of her daughter's disease. As had happened in Orange, mysterious illnesses were plaguing the girls of Ottawa. But here there was no Dr. Martland making pioneering medical discoveries, not even a Dr. Barry who was familiar with Fossey Jaw. The conditions the girls were experiencing were completely novel in this town. Although there had been that visit from the national investigator, Sven Kerr, he had visited the local dentists and doctors, and he had visited not once but twice. He had told them what he was looking for, described the telltale signs of radium poisoning. Yet the doctors do not seem to have joined the dots, nor notified the Bureau of Labour Statistics of these curious cases, as they had once promised to do. An oversight? Or was it, as some of the women were now starting to fear, that none of the local physicians will admit it? One Dial painter's relative thought so. "They didn't want anything to happen to the company," he said. "They were all bought off," claimed another. It was confusing, remembered Catherine's niece, Mary. I only remembered that no one seemed to know what was wrong, but we knew something was wrong. Really wrong.